Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
The US President Joe Biden has said he will consider personal sanctions against the Russian President Vladimir Putin if Russia invades Ukraine. And his comments were made as other Western leaders repeated warnings that Russia would pay a heavy price for invasion. With more on the developing situation, I'm joined on the line by Edward Lucas, London Times columnist, author and senior fellow at the Centre for European Policy Analysis. Good morning to you, Edward. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
How serious do you rate this situation right now?
This is the worst security crisis in Europe for decades, probably in our lifetime. And I'm still really worried that the European countries are not taking it seriously enough. The United States is focusing on this, but we see very mixed messages coming, particularly from Germany, and that encourages Putin to continue to escalate in the hope of getting what he wants.
Explain why you believe that of Germany, because I know in Ukraine they were disappointed, weren't they, with their response. But explain to our listeners why that is the case.
Well, the new German government under Chancellor Olaf Scholz is trying to steer a sort of middle course, which I think is disastrous. They have said that they don't want to stop the Russian gas pipeline Nord Stream 2 at this stage, which is one of the biggest vectors of Russian influence into Europe. They've also told the Estonians that the Estonians can't send some surplus military equipment to Ukraine because it's originally German. When Britain tried to send emergency military supplies to Ukraine, the Germans said we couldn't use their airspace, and we flew round via Denmark. And Putin feeds on any perception of disunity. If he thinks Europe is divided, then that shows to him his strategy is working, because he is basically what he's doing is divide and rule. And of course, the Ukrainians, who've already 14,000 Ukrainians have died already in this war since 2015, are paying the price for Western vacillation and indecision.
Despite that, though, the flow of arms to Ukraine continues.
Yes, and the trouble is that the weapons aren't really the decisive thing. It's nice for the Ukrainians to have more weapons, and it means if Russia actually chooses to invade, they will be able to resist a bit more effectively. But Russia is so much more advanced than Ukraine in military terms. Ukraine basically doesn't have an air force. It basically doesn't have air defenses. Russia has precision long-range artillery and rocket fires, which means they can hit targets deep inside Ukraine, and there's nothing Ukrainians can really do about it. So this is a kind of David and Goliath struggle, with Goliath having modern weapons and David only having his slingshot. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the other measures then in play, or the weapons at the disposal of America in particular. The United States President Joe Biden saying that he will consider personal sanctions against Vladimir Putin. And America has done that before. Bashar al-Assad in Syria, the former Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. But do you feel, Edward, that President Biden will go ahead with sanctions on another leader, a leader of another superpower?
I think it's a powerful threat. It will be interesting to see how they actually do it, because, as you say, Russia is not a sort of tin pot dictatorship. It's one of the world's largest country by land area and a member of the G8. And when that was still happening, but, it's a Syrian, it's just a very serious country with whom we need to have lots of dealings on everything from space to climate change. I think that what would work would be sanctioning the Russian elite, particularly the sort of Kremlin cronies who like going on holiday in the south of France and buying penthouses in the centre of London, where I'm speaking from you right now, and sailing their super yachts around the Mediterranean and so on. That would work, but that is a much harder thing, and it's not totally in the United States' gift to do that. But basically, the United States does have some very powerful financial sanctions. They can cut you off from using the dollar. They can cut you off from the international banking payment system, SWIFT. Those are very powerful sanctions. The danger is they don't just crash the Russian economy. They may crash the economies of everyone who's doing business with Russia as well. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm.
And how does Russia respond then to all of this, the warnings coming from the West and coming from America? Does it give them grist to the mill?
I think that at the moment, things are working quite well for Putin. He hasn't actually had to do anything. He's just put his troops on the border and issued a lot of threats. And he's seeing that the West is sort of negotiating with itself about what to do to calm him down, rather than telling him that what his behaviour, that Russia's behaviour is outrageous and must stop. So I think he's probably reckons he's calculated it quite well so far. And the big threat he's got is he can cut the gas off. Now, he can't cut the gas off forever because the gas carries on coming out of the ground and he has to put it somewhere. And Russia depends a lot on the export of oil and gas and coal to keep the country going. But he's got hundreds of billions, in the, as it were, in the bank in terms of his foreign exchange reserves. So he could afford to withstand quite a sharp dose of economic pain if he thought it was inflicting even more economic pain on Europe. So my worry is that he will say, almost like in a poker game, yes, I raise you. We're closing our gas pipelines for maintenance, and that means no fertilizer. It means a lot of industries stop. It may mean the lights start going out. It means people have to worry about heating their homes in the middle of winter. And there's a lot of Europeans who would say, well, sorry, we don't like that. Our politicians should do whatever's necessary to get the gas flowing again. Mm-hmm. And that would be an enormous strategic win for him.
I'm just looking at a map which illustrates where the troops are stationed around the Ukrainian border. And despite that and how alarming that looks, we hear reports from inside Ukraine where people are said to be quite calm. They're getting on with life. They may be stockpiling a bit, but there doesn't seem to be any sense of real alarm about this.
Well, I think Ukrainians are used to being basically at war. And as I mentioned earlier, we've had 14,000 Ukrainians have died in a kind of forgotten war since 2014, which is the result of Western complacency and inaction towards the threat from Russia, and they've paid the price. And they are quite phlegmatic about it. And I find it very moving when Ukrainians say, you know, I've got a rifle and my wife and kids or my kids and grandparents will go to the country cottage, and me and my husband or wife, and we'll go and just shoot the Russians if they come. It's very brave, but as I said earlier, the threat they're facing, I think, is not a sort of conventional invasion. It's probably going to be a mixture of kind of terrorist attacks, and sort of special operations, cyber attacks, and maybe long-range precision strikes, to which they don't have an easy answer. But I commend the Ukrainians for their bravery, just as I fought the West for its feebleness.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that the diplomatic efforts that are ongoing will yield any results?
I think the problem with diplomacy is you've got to know what you're trying to achieve. And I'm not sure the West has really worked out what it wants to achieve. We don't really have a proper assessment of the threat from Russia. We haven't worked out what it is that Putin is trying to do, even though he's frequently said it. But the West still sort of half thinks that Russia's basically a trading partner, and this is all the result of a misunderstanding, and if only we talk a bit more, we can solve it. And there's actually a really serious clash of interests here. There are things that Russia wants that are unacceptable for us, and there's things that we want that are unacceptable to Russia. And someone's going to have to give. Now, I would argue the West is bigger and stronger than Russia, and if we say countries around Russia have the right to be free, safe, prosperous, and independent, and Russia doesn't like it, well, that's tough on Russia. And Russia says we want countries around in our neighbourhood to be weak and under our thumb, and that's unacceptable to us. And I think we should just be asserting that, but I don't think the West has fully understood it.
And Edward, going back to the start, where you expressed how concerned you are about all of this, do you feel if tensions escalate, there is a chance that this could spread beyond Ukraine and into Europe?
Well, first of all, I would say very strongly that Ukraine is Europe, and it's one of the problems we have that we think Ukraine isn't Europe, and Ukrainians are absolutely determined to be European, and they're the only people who've actually died in blood-soaked European Union flags. And I think it's quite bad if this sort of treating them as some kind of other is part of the problem. But yes, I think there is a danger that if we fail in Ukraine, then other places will be next. And we already see a lot of Russian mischief in the Western Balkans, particularly in Bosnia-Herzegovina, but also in other parts of the Western Balkans. There was a failed putsch attempt in Montenegro not so long ago. And then there's the Baltic states, who are our close allies and believe perhaps more passionately in our values than we do ourselves. And there's certainly a lot of worry there, and in Sweden and Finland. And one of Putin's demands is no more countries should be allowed to join NATO. And this is causing near panic in Sweden and Finland, which are not members of NATO, but always thought they should be allowed to join if they want. And now Russia's saying you're never going to be allowed to join. And I think we may see another security crisis there, particularly if Finland decides it wants to join right now and the Russians say you can't. And then what do we do?
Edward, we'll leave it there for now, but thank you very much for that interesting analysis. Edward Lucas, London Times columnist and senior fellow at the Centre for European Policy Analysis. Coming up next on the programme, why does the mere memory of being embarrassed cause us to blush and wince? Dr. Sabina Brennan will be here.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.